We're ready to go, Lisa. Whenever
Excellent.
you are.
You're recording, right? Because I forgot to bring the little recorder out. Okay, good.
Yes.
You're good. Okay, thank you. All right, so Lisa, can I start?
Yes, please.
Okay. Can our board and staff see and hear? If so, just give a little wave. Everybody can see and hear. Excellent. Can members of the public see and hear? And if you can, if I see your picture, just give me a thumbs up. We're good. Excellent. Thank you. This meeting is being recorded. Once President Brooks asked me to call the roll, board members, indicate you are here as well as give permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record.
Thank you, Lisa. And I don't know what the practice is, but typically I just see staff and board on the screen, which makes it easier for me to read the faces when someone looks like they want to talk or something. Lisa, after we've heard comments from the public, if we could do that, that would make my life easier.
Got that, Jenny?
I can't remove participants' video, if that's what you're asking. Zoom doesn't allow that.
It is what I was asking. Okay, so let's move forward. That's okay. I'll just figure it out. I call the January 4th, 2022 Committee of the Whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Commissioner Boren is still absent. Commissioner Covey?
Present.
Commissioner Snyder?
And permission to record.
You're on mute, Bart.
Here, permission to record.
Excellent. Commissioner Spain?
Here, permission to record.
And President Brooks?
Here, permission to record.
And it is 7:07.
Very good. Moving to matters from the public, it is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. So there you go.
President Brooks, I don't know if you want to do another matters of the public after the presentation of Lakefront Racquet Courts, or if you'd like all comments now. Which would you prefer?
I think for I'm comfortable with doing comments now. I suspect people are comfortable making their comment now, but if there is anyone here still that would like to remain through to that time and desires to make a comment, of course I will entertain it then. But I would encourage people to make their comments now so they could not have to attend the rest of the meeting if they choose not to. So I did see a raised thumb, Mitch.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How are you? I'm Mitch Malamed. My wife Robin is sitting next to me. We have been 47-year residents of Glencoe. I served on the village board for 8 years as a trustee, and I participated in the focus group that took place, one of the 3 focus groups. My wife actually participated in the second focus group, so we were present at 2 of the 3 meetings. I would like to bring just very few things to your attention, and that is, number one, there was no, from the focus group discussions, there was no one that indicated pickleball is not very popular and very popular in Glencoe. There was no one who indicated there's not a need for pickleball courts in Glencoe. And there was no one who indicated that there was no need for a dedicated pickleball location. So the question became one of that being in our, and this included the tennis players, whether or not the lakefront is that location. And that's why I know what is being discussed tonight. There's definitely a shortage of pickleball courts. And from the economic perspective that we were presented with, it was quite clear that it could be an economic benefit to the village to pursue these courts. The only thing I would like to bring to the commissioner's attention tonight is that your discussion and the focus group centered around the use of the lakefront tennis courts, which must be redone. Clearly, anybody who walks by them can see them. I would like to bring to your attention, however, that I think if we proceed in a fashion of having dedicated pickleball courts in Glencoe, that one ought to at least look at the same time Shelton Park, which has 2 tennis courts, that were just redone as far as surfacing, but are well underutilized as far as tennis courts. And if that could be a consideration for the upcoming year financially, and again, I know there's a financial portion of this, it probably would serve the village very well to consider it as it relates to both parking, which is abundant there, noise, which is a consideration which was raised in the focus groups, and it is almost adjacent to the railroad tracks. So I would ask only that perhaps in our in your discussion and further discussion, that that be thought of as a secondary place or perhaps a primary place to put the courts.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mitch. Is there anyone else who would like to make comment this evening? Ah, yes, Mr. Chaplick.
Hi, thanks. Carl Rosenthal has successfully got me hooked on pickle. I've been playing in with him and others. It's a wonderful sport. Mitch took a little bit of the air out of my sails, as I was going to say the exact same thing. I think it's fantastic that the community is looking to add more courts. It's a super sport. I just think it's a tough location to do it right on the lakefront. So I echo Mitch saying if we can add more courts anywhere else, it'll ease parking issues. It'll just make it easier for people to enjoy the lakefront. And hopefully there's some alternative locations that we might consider before pressing forward. And that's it. I'll keep it short. Thank you for holding this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chaplick. Are there any other attendees who would like to comment?
I would like to make a comment, and thank you, Ira, and others. I've been working on behalf of the Glencoe Park District for several years. I also work in another park district. And wherever I go, it isn't because of me, it's because of the popularity of the sport. It's growing big time. It's growing big time, and people are looking everywhere where they can learn this wonderful game. I fortunately started playing quite a few years ago, about 8 years ago. And as a result of my playing, I saw the need for teaching as well because of the growth of this game. Formerly in Florida, California, Arizona, where you had a high density of retired people. And now it's grown big time in the Midwest. The problem is we see limited space. We don't want to take away, again, from the tennis people. We understand they love their game. That's great. But we love pickleball. And unfortunately, we need to have a place where to play this wonderful game. And the popularity of it, we see on empty tennis courts the need where pickleball courts could be located. And that's what we're doing in Glencoe. We're sharing tennis courts where you really need dedicated and not take away from the tennis people. The growth of this game in so many neighboring communities, they built dedicated courts and they can't build enough of them. It's an amazing game. And, I don't want to take too much time, but I want to state that it's a game that is, you'll utilize your parks so much more efficiently with people of all ages. It won't be just for the older retired. It will be for the younger people who are playing it in school as well. And I just believe that if we can get along with the tennis people and build adjacent to the tennis courts, or if you have an overabundance of tennis courts, transfer a couple of the tennis courts into pickleball courts. You can, from two tennis courts, you can do at least six pickleball courts. And it's just an amazing, fun game that if you're not familiar with it, you should Google it, but it's taking the country by storm.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Rosenthal. Are there any other residents who'd like to comment? And I'm not seeing any hands raised. So I am going to assume that's it for public comment. And we will move on then to, and again, you're welcome to stay, obviously. or if you'd like to comment again after our discussion or leave. We'll move on now to the presentation of Lakefront Racquet Courts Focused Groups report. Lisa Shepherd will lead the discussion after introducing Elsa Fisher and Barry Dunn, who will present the report.
Actually, Elsa Fisher is not here tonight. I didn't catch that. She okay. was not scheduled to be here. She facilitated our focus groups, but we did not have her come tonight because I thought I could present the report. So the one thing I want to remind the board that today's discussion is about lakefront tennis courts. It all started because we know that the lakefront tennis courts are at the end of their useful life. We do have the idea of pickleball going to Lakefront Park actually came about from tennis individuals when we were talking about West Park, and we are applying for a grant for redoing that park, an Oslag grant, and where we would take one tennis court, make two pickleball, and keep two tennis courts. At that time, during the public comment, tennis gentleman came and said, "Oh, no one uses lakefront tennis courts for tennis. Why don't you have pickleball there?" So it's kind of everybody's like moving the pickleball courts around. So then the board commissioned the staff and hired a landscape architect to do conceptual designs for the renovation of the racquet courts, we're calling them, and then that small playground. So just those two amenities. So that's when we started down the line of, do we want to talk about pickleball courts at that location? What would be the community feedback for that? So we really have money. We think we have money allocated. We will know closer to the end of this budget year to redo those within the next year and a half to 2 years. But we just really need to know what direction we want to move so that we can finish up those conceptual design. The focus groups was just one part. Those we asked to come in were people that play pickleball, people that play tennis, to kind of get their feeling. We also invited some of the neighbors around the area that are also both tennis and pickleball players also. We also plan to have a community group, a meeting on February 22nd at 7 p.m. with Hitchcock will present the conceptual designs for the playground and then different design options for that racquet court. So just remind you, this is just one step of this whole process. The community meeting on February 22nd will be advertised via the district's website, social media, email blasts, signboards at the park, and letters to neighbors that have bought the park, and email to anybody who have attended past focus groups or expressed interest in tennis or pickleball. So we'll hit everybody in the community will have an opportunity to be notified in different ways. Then we'll provide the board a recap of that. After that, we'll give a list of concerns that the community has, and obviously some are raised here today. And then we'll move from there to talk to the board about when the funding is available for this park and go from there. So I'm sure you all had a chance to look at it, and I'll see if I can share. Can I share the screen, Jenny? I can, right? Okay. Well, I can. Hold on a second, please. I'm just going to throw up this. There we go. Nope, that's not it. Hold on. Love technology. Oops. Jenny, I lost everybody. Where did everybody go? Hey, Jenny, can you pull up the report for me by any chance? Oh, it's over here. Hold on. Can you all see this now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, we see it.
All right, perfect. So Barry Dunn did three focus groups. We actually were able to accommodate everybody who wanted to be in the focus group. So we added an additional focus group on so that anybody who wanted to express their opinion could. I'm not going to read over this because this report is available on our website. So I'm sure all of you have seen it. The board has had a chance to review it. List all the names of everybody who attended the focus groups. what we to kind of bring it down is pretty much what the members of our community said, is that pickleball is very hot, and we've known that as a very big trend that's coming up, that people definitely want pickleball, dedicated pickleball courts in Glencoe. We have them. We have some courts that are lined for it right now, where you can move the net or you play over a tennis net. But there's definitely a desire for dedicated pickleball courts that are that way all the time. We have lined pickleball courts, I believe, right, Chris, at Watts and Shelton. So you can see that the majority definitely want a pickleball. There is a large tennis use. Actually, we've seen in and Bobby could probably talk to this. We've seen a large increase in our tennis court usage. So when people say that tennis courts aren't being used, that's not really the fact in Glencoe. They are being very well used, especially through the pandemic. We saw a great rise in both our classes, our tennis court reservations, and just general people going out there. But so there's definitely a need for tennis courts and pickleball courts in these things. In this community, we gave options of different hybrids. For example, all tennis courts. So keep it the way it is: two tennis courts and one single. Option B was all pickleball, six courts. Option C was a hybrid layout with two doubles tennis and two pickleball. And then there was another hybrid with two doubles tennis and four pickleball. And if you could see, there was a variety of different people that wanted different things. There was a large group that wanted the six courts, 48.3%, but also a lot were one tennis double and four pickleball, or 20.7%. There was one individual indicate really none of the above, would like both tennis and pickleball taken out of that location totally. I'm not going to read all over the comments, but there's a lot of comments for the pickleball here. A lot of comments from tennis players who felt strongly that Lake Park is not the ideal location for pickleball. And then you had pickleball people that thought it was. So that it would be a great asset to have it in more pickleball courts. And it really is more that they really wanted dedicated pickleball courts in Glencoe. And so that was what we got out from there. There's comments about if we did hybrid, the height of the fence and stuff, and that'll all be worked out in design. And then where to lay them out. They also would like the board to look at other locations for pickleball. As the board knows, right now we do not have any funds dedicated to make new courts. And I don't know if Chris, can you share to the board our inventory currently? I will stop sharing so you can do that.
Yeah, just a moment.
Okay, thank you. I don't think I
got it. It's disabled, Jenny, or
Jenny,
Aaron.
Can you put Chris is able to?
Aaron, you have to do it.
Oh, okay.
I did.
Chris, can you do it now?
Yes, one moment. Can everyone see the FAQ?
Yep. Perfect. Thank you.
So Lisa asked if we could just briefly talk through the existing inventory of what we have. So the board can see our existing court inventory, Central, Lakefront, Shelton, Watts West. That's 13 doubles courts and one singles court. For reference sake, as discussion about proximity to local residences, you can see the distance to the nearest private residence of each court. So basically, we went from the closest point of the racket court to the property line of the nearest residence. So you can see that we're typically between about 70 and 90 some feet, and with one outlier at Watts where we're 53 feet away. So again, these courts are nestled into our park system. We have athletic courts such as basketball and frisbee golf that are much closer to residences than even 50 feet. But I just thought for discussion purposes, we could include that in this FAQ. There was also some dialogue about estimating the construction of new pickleball courts, so not a conversion of an existing court. So as we looked at the costs at West when we did the OSLAD grant, and we looked at the costs at Lakefront, that was for basically ripping out the existing court down to the foundations and putting a new court in. So we really would have two options to proceed if we were interested in looking at our inventory. And one would be the estimate of construction costs for new pickleball courts. So as you know, COVID-19 has adjusted some of these numbers, but these come from our latest grant project at West. So I'm pretty confident we're looking at about $70,000 per pickleball court. For two, somewhere between about $130,000 and $150,000 if we were going to be adding them. That would include excavation, drainage, professional service fees, fencing, ADA accessibility, and an overall study of how they might impact the park if they were added. On the flip side, there is some additional savings if we were to look at converting an existing pickleball or an existing tennis court. So I'm not suggesting portable nets or striping on top of a doubles court. This would be for the removal of an existing court, installation of a new fence and new pickleball court. So I estimated that at $35,000 based on the fact that we would be doing, we would have to color code, add new nets, those types of things. So it's a generous allowance to color code all of West Park. This year was about $44,000. So I think it's something that we could get done if we were so inclined, but it wouldn't be something that we could turn around very quickly without some longer, deeper dialogue about the subject. So any particular questions about the inventory or Lisa Brooks?
Yeah, Chris, quick question. Quick, you could convert, if we are existing tennis courts, you can take one tennis court and convert it into two pickleball courts, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Without changing the footprint, without adding any additional square feet?
Without adding any additional square feet, you would have to add fencing and you would have to recolor code it and bore new holes for posts.
Right. It wouldn't have to be larger. Okay. Yeah. That was my question. Well done, Lisa. Thank you. Any other questions for Chris?
I have a question. I have a question.
Well, Ms. Rosenthal, I know you have a question. The problem is the way the meeting is run is it's a board meeting. So what I would ask that you do is just save that as a comment for public comment after this board discussion, and then we will make sure that we get back to you.
Fine.
Thank you. And I'm not seeing everyone, but does anyone else have some
Chris,
some
can you close your document, please?
Very certainly.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Now we can see everybody. Thank you. So from what I can tell is that from our report, there's definitely a desire for pickleball courts. There's definitely a desire to have from both sides, pickleball users and tennis, to have pickleball courts in Lakefront Park and also tennis courts in Lakefront Park. So if you can see, a lot of people thought a hybrid would be a good option of that. What they don't want is an option where pickleball is painted over tennis. They want dedicated courts. That came through loud and clear. Any other questions from the report, really? There's a whole summary page.
Yeah, Lisa Shepherd, do we have a good feeling for, you know, a bunch of individuals said they don't feel, and this is not a question to the public, but a question to Lisa. A bunch of individuals said they don't feel like this is the right location for pickleball. Do we know why that is? Is it because it's windy? Is it because it's popular a beach destination? You know, why do we understand why people said that?
Well,
this was not sufficient or not a good area for pickleball in particular?
Well, the pro pickleball people says, according to our report, the tennis courts at those locations are not used much. Tennis courts abound and seem to be underutilized. So they're pro, you know, the ones who want tennis, they want to keep the lakefront tennis courts. No one really came out and said, in our, except for one, that said, oh, no, we don't want pickleball at that location.
Okay.
They're sharing that at this meeting today, but in our
I thought I read, and I'll bring it up.
There was a few that, if you would say why not have it, the noise that pickleball would add to this location, and that was more based on that they consider lakefront like a serene and tranquil area. When they go there, like watching the looking over the beach, but we do know that there is a lot of noise that's generated by a beach by music and things like that. So it's not always a serene location, but a lot of times in the afternoon when you go out there, it is. They're worried about the traffic that would likely be added because it's a very popular park, which would be a concern. We have a lot of beach traffic during the summer. And the concern of that adding six pickleball courts in this location will attract additional non-residents to the park. And then again, adding to the traffic issue. And we do have a traffic issue, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the traffic issue, we always have a traffic issue.
Yeah, we always have that.
I don't think that's a reliable, discussion item because that is consistent. But somebody mentioned that pickleball is louder than tennis and should not be added as it will disrupt the tranquility.
That someone did make that note that it is louder a sport than tennis. It is louder. It's a different kind of ball that's used for pickleball. Whether you could hear it from the court to 90 feet to the house, what I would recommend is that in the spring the board go out to pickleball and actually listen to the sound of the courts being used, and then take yourself 90 feet where a property line would be to hear that. But it is a different noise than tennis balls. Tennis are, But if you have a grunter when you're playing tennis, it's just as loud.
Yeah, I mean, I think the park itself, I wouldn't call that park at all a tranquil park. I think during the summer, that's a fairly active park.
Yeah.
So I do think it's interesting to understand that perspective. So thank you for that.
Yeah, so that's just an opinion. It wasn't overwhelmingly through here. It was just something that was brought up. I think overwhelming, I don't think anybody, there's a few that thought it should be all six. Most of them like the hybrid. That's what we tend to do throughout our whole park system is we do, a few courts here and there for recreational play. We do that for tennis. We do that for basketball. We don't put in eight courts of basketball. We put in one here and there. We usually put two to three tennis courts. I think Central is our biggest court.
Central's got four. Lisa, I think it's important to note that even new tennis courts are going to drive traffic to this park.
Yeah.
We know that the tennis courts aren't getting used like other parks based on the existing conditions. So if there was to be three brand new tennis courts there, we would expect additional traffic at this park based solely upon those brand new tennis courts as well. And like we've seen with any park, we build something new. That's where everyone wants to be.
New playgrounds, new tennis courts, they tend to have more people come to them. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa and Chris. I appreciate that.
Carol, do you have some? I think Carol's going to speak.
Yes. I have two questions. One is, did you hear feedback from tennis players that it's if it's disruptive to have a hybrid situation? I mean, I saw that there would be a fence there. They're different sports. Just curious about the feedback of the shared spaces. And then also, I think, Lisa, at one point you had mentioned that just given that those courts are over, I think it's a water tank or something like that, it would have to have a different surface. And as a tennis player, I'm very familiar that playing on different surfaces, the ball plays differently. Curious as to, whether or not that surface would affect tennis play or pickleball play, and if that's been brought up at all.
I'm going to let Chris address the surface play, but your first question, actually, when you're looking through this, there's quite a few people say, I'm a tennis player, and I think hybrid courts would be a great option. I am a tennis player, but I support putting at least, four dedicated pickleball courts at lakefront. There was an overwhelming, I'm a tennis player, but I recognize a growing enthusiasm for pickleball. Lakefront park works great and has great potential for both sports. So there was a few that obviously just wanted for tennis, and then there's a few that just wanted for pickleball, but it seems overwhelmingly there was an ability to share. that they didn't say, oh, it definitely won't work.
Okay. So
and we have a lot of our tennis courts next to playgrounds and things like that, which are very loud. And, you know, so it's not unusual that we have multi-use parks with tennis courts in them.
I can just speak briefly to the surfacing question, Carol. You know, the surfacing is everyone, it's a matter of preference. And I think one of the things that I can say comfortably, and typically in the Midwest, when you see a sport court or some type of synthetic turf down in an outdoor park, it's typically a Band-Aid over a failed asphalt court. So there are indoor facilities that have synthetic grass and other types of surfaces that they're able to maintain to very high standards. Typically in an outdoor space, when you're seeing that, it's because you have a problem with what's underneath it. So in our case, that's exactly what we have at Lakefront. We have the Nova grass put down over a failed asphalt tennis court, which is really the foundation of all the problems that we've had at that site, is that there's absolutely no drainage on the Nova grass that we have. So, you know, I'm not a professional pickleball player and I'm not a professional tennis player, but I can tell you that from a maintenance standpoint, you know, I would recommend that the board really consider looking at asphalt for both courts. That's going to be the easiest to maintain, the most economical, and that's also something that we would expect a 15 to 25 year life out of, depending on the surface, whereas some of the other products that are out there just aren't going to have that kind of life for us in that kind of unrestricted environment. So I would recommend that we pursue whatever product we put down for the pickleball, we also pursue the same product for the tennis at that location.
And while we didn't get into a lot of detail on surfacing in this focus group, that will be more of the community meeting when
I'm sorry, who is that speaking?
Adam, can you wait a second, please?
Yeah, just who is that speaking? Please identify.
It's Lisa Shepherd. So what we will talk more in detail about the type of surface in our architectural meeting in February. But they will be recreational courts. And just like all the other tennis courts in our inventory, they're for recreational play, not professional play. So,
excuse me, who was that male?
That was Chris Liner, our director of parks and planning.
Thank you, Lisa. Bart, have you something that you'd like to add to this discussion?
And Chris, I appreciate you mentioning that there was asphalt on those courts, and that's why there was a grass surface put over that. I wasn't aware of it. I'm assuming since there's a water tank under there, the footprint is set, and that's why there's two doubles and one single court. There wasn't enough for the whole thing. And it seems complicated to me, but I just wanted to ask, would it be possible to extend that area by 10 feet or so to make it three doubles courts?
Bart,
it's not a request, it's just an informational question.
That's a good question. Basically, the tanks themselves are unmovable from our standpoint. The
right.
courts can get larger, they can't get smaller.
Yes.
So if we're not in a position where, other than, say, removing the courts and planting grass on top of it, we really can do it. We can't plant trees there. We're limited with some of the types of things that we can do based on the water tanks. So our footprint can get larger. There is some village infrastructure that's there that there would be a cost to move, but it would not be impossible if we planned it out in advance.
Okay. And so you could, and it sounds like there's added expenses, obviously, with moving utilities, but you could add an additional section over what's now dirt. And it could be done in a way that would keep the surfaces level and not have a crack down that add-on.
That's correct. We would have to likely remove the mature landscape screen that's there, as well as move park drainage and then some other components regarded to the water plant operation. So
okay, you answered my question. So there is not insignificant complexity to doing that. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Bart. I would just add to this discussion that I've always thought of this particular recreational amenity to be really spectacularly unique. We have tennis courts overlooking a lake that looks like an ocean. It's like the Great Gatsby. We're unbelievably lucky to have this. And it's important to be very careful as we go forward, considering all of everything that we can consider, although we're making this decision somewhat in a vacuum because we don't know yet what and if and when we will do something to the other courts. So we have to kind of look at this frozen, separate from those future decisions that we don't know when we will be making them. But I will say, contrary to what Michael said, Michael, I respectfully disagree. I do consider the lake to be a place of serenity and contemplation. I know that the chaos of the lake is for a short period of time, you know, it's a 12 months of the year, that lake is attended by a lot of people. And what happens other than the height of the summer when we've got a lot of hullabaloo and people going down to use the beach, is a lot of folks coming to look at the lake, to sit on the benches and look over the lake. And I don't even know, I have no clue if the pounding of the pickleball would be any kind of an intrusion on that, but it's something to consider as we continue on this, you know, investigation as to what we're going to do. So that those are my only thoughts on that. And while new courts will bring in more people, I think pickleball courts will certainly be used most of the year. And so it will kind of change the environment in that area. So those are all things to consider. I very much appreciate in the last minute before the meeting, me, Lisa and Chris jumping up and getting some more information about that we can consider what it would cost to redo a court, what it costs to come up with a whole new court. Thank you so much for that. And also to remind us that we are going to have a group visit to some pickleball courts for those of us who do not play pickleball, we can hopefully get a better feel for things. So I do appreciate that. Lisa?
If it's okay, I want to share the screen just to show what we're going to show at that community meeting.
Yes.
As far as potential layouts. And then if the board does not want us to consider any of these, it would be good feedback before we bring, if the board's like, I don't want this option for sure, then we won't bring it to that community meeting. So let me just grab this really quick. This is it. All right, can you all see this? Can you all see this?
Yep.
Okay, great. Okay, so potential eight is the current. This is the current layout at the lakefront. It's a tennis single and then two double courts. That's potential layout A, which would be like it is now. Potential B indicates six pickleball courts. You can tell at the same footprint. Layout C is two doubles tennis courts and then the pickleball courts, being away from the lake, so where you have the seating wall, people looking over the overlook, the pickleball would be further away, but still, I believe this is where we judge the 90 feet from the closest resident, so it's still quite a bit away from the closest resident, so that's potential C layout, and potential D layout is with the four pickleball courts closer to the overlook, and then one single tennis, doubles tennis. So if the board, you know, has any advice, if you do not want us to present any of these to the community group on the 22nd, or if you want us to share all and get feedback, that is fine also.
Actually, just one comment, and it's fairly insignificant, but the first slide is incorrect. I'm quite sure that the singles court is on the left-hand side and the right-hand side is a doubles court.
Yeah, that's great feedback, Bart. The reason that Hitchcock showed it like that is because they thought that the singles court would have the least amount of use.
Oh, so okay.
People's playing doubles wouldn't be disturbing someone else's game to walk through it from the playground area.
All right. And I was looking at it like that's the way it is now. Okay. Thank you.
I said that. So that was my apology. I got it wrong. So yeah. So it's flip-flopping the singles over towards the lake more.
Okay.
Does anybody want me to see any other ones, or should I take off stop share so we can see everybody's faces?
I'm good with them. Lisa, can you just kind of summarize what the next steps are?
So the next step would be is we would have a community meeting on, I believe it was February 22nd. I'm pretty sure that was the date, where we would bring the potential layouts to the community along with potential playground. Because we're replacing that small tot playground at the same time and bring that conceptual design to the community at that time. And then after we get community input, we would bring those designs back to the park board to discuss one last time before deciding on the conceptual design.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments from the board?
And anybody can access this report. It's on our website under board committee for today's date. It's been there since Tuesday. So if anybody wants to really get into the details of it, it lists our participation in our both pickleball classes that we offer and our tennis classes, and usage is on here along with our current tennis court inventory. So that's all on there also.
Very good. Okay, so as promised, I am going to open it up to public comment one more time. Again, keep your comments to 3 minutes, and it isn't a question and answer period, although we will get back to you if you have concerns. So does anyone want to speak on this matter?
I will. I'll start it out because I would say whatever you build, I would consider that it should be built big. And if you're going to do pickleball, two courts, believe it or not, is not enough. Four courts would be ideal if you could add more space somehow. Because again, I don't want to take away from tennis, but if you have adequate tennis courts elsewhere, because once you build these courts, they will be jam-packed. Wherever I play, I see empty tennis courts, but completely filled pickleball courts. And as I mentioned earlier about neighboring communities, they build courts with six in mind. Buffalo Grove did 10, and that's not enough. So I'm not going to bore you to tell you all the neighboring communities, but when they do it the right way, which needs to be a significant number, because what will happen is you're going to have people wanting to play, and unless you do a reservation system, which people just showing up, there'll be a lot of people coming. And there was a comment earlier about people coming to the parks. Well, that's a good thing. That's what you want them to be coming to the parks. And I don't know what the reluctancy is. Yeah, the parking may be somewhat of a problem, but hopefully you'll have adequate parking. But, you're not concerned about it when it's tennis, but what it seems to be when it's pickleball, everyone's worried about parking, which just shows the enormous popularity of this game.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone else like to comment following our discussion? We're all good. Okay, thank you so much. Then we will move on to our next discussion item, the Glencoe Beach Pier Decking and Railing Bid Discussion. Again, Lisa Shepherd and Chris Liner will lead that discussion. Oh, okay, there's some waving. Okay, there's some waving from Mr. Chaplick.
Just saying goodbye. Sorry.
Oh,
thank you.
Bye.
Sorry.
Bye,
thank
Ira.
Thank you for doing this.
Yes, thank you for attending.
Goodbye.
I'm sorry, Lisa and Chris, go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw it over to Chris on this one. Chris, it's
I'm
all yours.
I'm going to say that for the first time in 7 years, we got a bad bid. So as you can see in the memo, we've got a project that's come back considerably over budget. Our budget estimates were, of course, now that we're talking about the pier, my five-year-old is screaming in the other room, right? So we initially built our estimates around a 2019 pre-COVID estimate. In that, we had the concrete deck and we had new railings. At the time, we were carrying a placeholder of $35,000. After we had some significant dialogue with the Lakefront Advisory Committee and the board, we decided that if we were going to replace the railings, we were going to go with a quality product. We wanted to look at stainless steel. At the time, we were thinking, okay, this is going to be a $30,000 to $40,000 add to the project. On the whole, going to be worth it as far as operational savings. So what we found was that based on material availability, we were seeing our stainless steel railings coming in closer to $480,000. So that is far, far outside of where our initial thought and our initial value that we had placed on those stainless steel railings. So we're at a point now where we either have to discuss doing the project as it is and paying the additional amount, or value engineering the stainless steel rail. And I agree with Lisa, valuing the stainless steel railings out of the project. I mean, to me, to spend $500,000 on these railings right now in this bid climate is not the right idea. I've spoken with Baird and I've spoken with the contractor, and I think that we can make some repairs to our existing railings. And looking at them from just a cost benefit analysis, we're spending $5,000 to $7,000 a year on maintenance. We're going to get a lot of years of maintenance for $480,000.
So what we'd like to do is that our permit for the pier is for 5 years. We know we have to do the concrete work because we've had it the way it's looked the last 2 years, not ideal. So we know we have to do that. So what we'd like to do is do the concrete work, look beautiful, get all of our railings repainted, put those back in, and then see what's happening. We believe that there is obviously a huge escalation because of what's happening in the world right now, and that a lot of these, a lot of the contractors really jumped up the price unbelievably because they don't know if they can even get steel. So we think that's a lot of it. So we'll keep an eye on this, look at it, and then come back to it before that pier permit ends and see if they've gone down enough that we could consider doing this. So we'll put the existing pier our railings back in, put it in our budget to have it contract out, do a bid to contract out to have them power, you know, painted every year, some for replacement, and then see what happens in three to four years. So that's what our recommendation is, to go ahead with concrete work and then take out the stainless steel railings out of the bid package.
Thank you. Chris, quick question for you. I've lived through a few rounds of how are we going to deal with these railings? And I know you and your staff have made a valiant effort on a couple of occasions. This is going to be different. You're not going to do it in-house. You're going to contract it out. Do you have a sense of what they'll do? I mean, it's not like, is it that they'll take it to some kind of a facility? And
so
what do you think? What's this going to look like?
No one hates these railings more than me.
I know.
So I'm going to tell you that these railings, you know, we've tried lots of different approaches. We my first year with the district, we pulled them, we sandblasted them, we had them recoated. The challenge with this environment is anything that we're putting down there is getting rocks thrown against it. So any type of a steel product that has a coating on it, that coating is going to come right off every season. So we've done it two different ways. We've contracted it out, which is a cost of, I would say now, probably between $7,000 and $10,000 just for paint. Or we've done it in-house, depending on the weather, depending on what we had going on. You know, the benefit of the contractor is they can obviously surge four or five painters down there and get it done in one day, whereas we just don't have that kind of labor hours. The other thing is we have had sections of the railings fabricated. So there have been years where, you know, we come down there in Lake Michigan, it's been kind enough to take two or three sections away and we don't know where they are. They typically run between about $2,000 and $3,000 a section to have new sections made. So again, far more efficient financially than the stainless steel railings. I just, those railings, that's the cost of an entire park renovation. That's half the roof on the Takeoff Center. And I just can't see, you know, recommending to the board that we pursue that. I think we are going to feel some pain with the painted railings. I mean, we're going to have to we'll go out for a 3 or 4 year bid and have them painted every year or continue to paint them in-house. It's not going to be as aesthetically appealing as the $480,000 railings, but I just don't see an option other than, you know, spending this huge amount of money on something that I just don't think the dividend's there for us right now.
Yeah, I think the question answered itself when I saw
no one hates them more than me.
I know. I thought of you, Chris. For what it's worth, I thought of you, Chris, when I saw that. Commissioners, would anyone else like to comment on the railing or the decking?
So just so I understand it, we might come back in 2, 3, 4 years and say, well, the cost of stainless steel has come way back down. Things are being manufactured. We would then be able to consider replacing the current ones with stainless steel, or are we losing that option in the next 5 years.
I would say, Bart, that's exactly what we're proposing. I mean, whether we come back down to the lakefront in a larger overall lakefront comp plan, and that's just one element of, you know, the needed renovations that the beach house is going to need, and the trellises and the walkways and the stairs and those types of things. But I think you're spot on. I mean, I think that the Baird has indicated that not doing this now doesn't preclude doing it later.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Very good. If there are no other comments on this, then we will move to our discussion on the reciprocal agreement with Northbrook Park District regarding the Aquatic Center and Beach Passes. Lisa Shepherd and Bobby Collins will lead the discussion.
Sure. Just really quick, going back, we're just going to bring it for the next at the board meeting, a motion to approve the lowest responsible bidder minus the steel railing. So we'll bring that back in January, I'm hoping, so that we can get that project underway and started. So, okay, so discussion of civil agreement. So prior to the pandemic, we had an agreement with Northbrook Park District that allowed our residents to get resident rates at Northbrook Pools and Northbrook residents to get resident rates at our beach. We suspended in 2020 because of the pandemic. We had limited passes on sale, so we didn't do that. And then last year, again, because of the pandemic, we did not re-up that agreement. So we're going into a new summer. We kind of got a feeling how many passes we're selling. So coming back to see if the board would want to do this reciprocal agreement. It is best practices that if you don't have an asset yourself and you can strike a deal with the neighboring park district to kind of trade services, that's looked favorably upon it. Bobby, I'm gonna ask you to share your screen. Aaron, if you can let Bobby share. I just want to show you some, or do I have it? Or I might have it too. Do you have it?
I sent it to you earlier, but I can share the email I sent too.
Or I can pull it up. I just found it. Oops. Hold on a second. Okay, here it is. Can everybody see this? Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to give you kind of an idea of the past numbers. In my report in the board packet, listed how many, but prior to the pandemic, how many people use the beach and how many people use the pool as far as the reciprocal agreement. This is the revenue just based on the last 2 years. So 2020, I would kind of ignore that because we sold very limited passes to non-residents. We capped it at a certain amount. So really, you have to look at 2021. So we sold 1,574 passes for a revenue of $110,000. So without if all 1,574 came as resident rates, it would be the revenue would be $55,000, so half of that. So kind of gives you an idea about the cost of that. And this one stops here. Sorry, we're doing. So that kind of gives you an idea of what that was. In the past, it seemed that there was more of a history of. But there's always been more of history of Northbrook coming over to our beach than vice versa. So it kind of gives you an idea. But we did have in 2019, 88 using getting resident rates at Northbrook, 146 in 2018, kind of weather depending. But there's been pretty much, except for at the beginning of our agreement, there's been over 200, sometimes 300 that get passes to our beach. So This initiative, I believe, was Andre, who's here, was one of the ones who suggested this agreement. So it's really this is a board decision whether we would want to do this reciprocal agreement this year.
Lisa, what is the cost savings for the 88 people that like we know that Northbrook saved $55,000. What did our members save on at Northbrook?
Bobby, do you know that? That's a great question.
The family price is around the same of what the beach passes are, so they'd save about $130, $140.
Do they have 100% markup? between resident and non-resident?
Yeah, it's up there. I don't know. I actually tried to look for it today. They don't have last year's prices on it. They've taken them down. So it's been a couple of years. Normally it's over $100 more.
100% more, because ours is 100% more.
Yeah, but we did that. We only did that in the last 2 years.
Oh yeah, I know. But that's we're talking about.
Yeah.
What we're going to go ahead. I believe, and I don't quote me, it's more like a 50% increase, but I don't know if that's true anymore.
Yeah.
It worked at about $100 a family, I think is what it was. About $100 extra if you're a non-resident.
I'm going to say about more savings, and the only difference is volume.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, before the pandemic, it was 2-1, effectively 2 Northbrook residents for every 1 Glencoe resident.
Yeah.
We also get access to a punch pass, which is not included in there. That kind of muddies the water a little bit. We
and
did
access
have some
to swimming lessons, which we don't really offer at our beach. So residents, right, Bobby, they get resident rates in swimming lessons, which is a great value for our residents, for kids learning how to swim.
And then also just to note that they only had one of their 2 pools open last summer with very limited access. So a lot of Northbrook residents signed up for beach passes because they wanted access to water and they weren't sure. They had very limited time. So that's why you saw the surge last summer.
Good point, Bobby. Very good point. Yeah. So I guess we're looking for a consensus. The board doesn't have to take formal action. I can sign the contract, but we bring it back to the board to say yes or no at committee level. So,
right.
What do you think?
So, Carol, you probably have some thoughts on this.
Well, I guess I do. But one question came to mind is, you know, it seems like this is a best practice just to have a reciprocal agreement. And no, we don't have a pool, so it's great to have access. But in terms of the revenue lost, I guess, you know, there's a benefit of those people getting the Northbrook pool, but what are we losing from not getting that potential 55,000 in revenues?
Right. And we don't know if it'll be the same this coming year, because Bobby is correct. They only had 1 pool open. They'll have 2 open. They didn't know what they would do for the pandemic. So we don't know if it'll always be that 55. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But let's say 30 to 50. I'd like to think when someone comes to our beach, they'll know how wonderful it is and want to come back. So what's the opportunity cost of...
There was a lot of negative feedback in the survey from Northbrook residents on the price. Just putting that out there, but it was pretty negative.
Okay.
Was that because they had the past simple agreement, do you think?
Yeah, because they were used to paying resident rates. So going from $140 a family to $280 for a family of 4 is a pretty significant jump.
Hey, can we go back like 2 years to 2 summers ago? as I recall, at the beginning of this pandemic, some beaches, I think, weren't opening or they didn't have the staff, whatever. We seemed to do a pretty amazing job opening the beach and making it available for people in Glencoe at a very uncertain and challenging time. And I've heard a lot of compliments about what we did, but things are, you know, I'm not sure. I think that things were fairly restrictive then just because of the high concerns about the pandemic. And then as the pandemic faded, it's like, okay, we did better last summer, but we're in the third wave and we're at the highest point. It's hard to predict where it's going. And is this really the right time to make a decision about what we want to do with the beach next summer, because we don't know where it's going to be? And one easy way to look at things is sort of like, what if we hadn't done anything and this was May 1st? Would we open it up or would we get restrictive? What if things were as bad May and beginning of May as they are right now? I mean, I wouldn't be going to the board meeting if it weren't on Zoom. I don't want exposure to any more people than necessary. So I don't know. I just, it's, I have a, is this really, do we, is this really the right time to make this decision?
Right. I understand that, but we do have to make the decision for marketing purposes. This is the time of year to do it. So either decide, hey, we're not going to do it. We're going to take another year break until officially the pandemic's over and then really look at numbers next year. That's not a bad decision. Say we're not totally taking it off the table, but we just want one more year to finish out, or hopefully finish out the pandemic. That's not a bad, would not be a bad call to do.
Okay, so if we're not being restrictive, there's, and sometimes you have to do this, there's a leap of faith that the pandemic will be significantly lower and we will want to have the beach more open and invite more people at discounted rates. I mean, it seems like that's what we're doing. We're making a leap of faith that the pandemic will be lower and people comfortable on a more crowded beach.
Well, I think we still want, right, there could be more people bypasses because it's a lower rate. That is a possibility. We didn't feel that last year the beach was overcrowded. We really liked our way of doing the passes where only pass holders were allowed on weekends, but we never felt that overwhelming, like we had too many people down there. So if we added another 1,000 down there, I don't know if that would make it feel overcrowded. If we kept with the same way we did last year, which I think the staff is recommending, especially for this summer, is you have to have a season pass holder to come on weekends. But you know, that is a fair, I mean, that could possibly happen.
Okay.
Just in the survey, when you filtered out resident versus non-resident, we asked a question, do you plan to buy a pass next year? The number was significantly lower from non-residents, mostly from the Northbrook residents. I think it was below 60%.
So oh, really?
Yeah. It was all based on price. But residents were still pretty high. Also, because we changed from allowing dailies to 2 years ago, they don't have the option to buy dailies now. So they were really forced into buying the passes for the weekend. So that's where you also saw another spike. The value there, they made that decision that it was value. And then, you know, maybe they didn't use it a lot, so they felt, well, I won't buy a pass going forward. So we're not expecting to see a huge jump. I would be cautiously optimistic thinking, you know, if we did 1,000 Northbrook passes, I'd be very happy next year.
Yeah, I mean, there's ways to mitigate this. And so I first of all, I think given this more than like even 20 minutes of discussion, it's probably, you know, it's probably more than it's worth. But I'm not that worried about the overcrowding, even if you have, you know, 300 or 400 passes, which is kind of typical of what you have. The odds are these folks are going to show up, you know, 5 or 6 times per summer over the course of, you know, 15 weekends. And so I'm not worried about the crowding thing. I think that I also see it, Lisa, a little bit differently than you do. I don't look at it as a 55,000 loss. I see these folks as more incremental than I do, you know, dilution. Like we would call that, what you're measured as dilution. If they had paid the full price, they would have paid 55,000 more. I see them as incremental people. I am fine continuing this. I think things are outside and there's pretty good evidence that, you know, more things are safe outside than not. I think having our folks having access to the pools, it gives our members, you know, it gives the Glencoe residents something they don't have access to at a very little cost to us. So I err on the side of trying it again. That being said, I don't feel that strongly about it. I don't think it's that. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here, but I do err on the side of I think we should go for it. I see it as incremental revenue at a low cost.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Just very quickly, I agree. Probably don't need to discuss it too much longer, but I will say I liked Bart's analysis that perhaps this is too soon to make this decision and that we're warranted waiting one more year and seeing how this summer goes. We're at a bit of a crisis point now, and I think I'd like to see this situation more in the rear view before we make this decision. And if I interpreted what Carol said, I agree with Carol. It is, in theory, a reciprocal arrangement like this is really the way I like to look at things, and I think it's a really good thing for both Northbrook and Glencoe. However, the equity really isn't there. They've got a population of 35,000 versus 8,800. The beach is kind of something appealing to all demographics. A pool pass is kind of more attractive to families with young children. We pay dearly for the privilege of having a beach and a lakefront here in Glencoe. And one has to say, well, okay, Northbrook gets resident rates, but then our other neighbors don't get resident rates. It just seems there's something doesn't seem quite right to me about that. However, I don't think it's worth really discussing too much further, except that I also think we should wait a year. So that's two of us suggesting we wait a year. Carol, you should weigh in, and I have to tell you what Stephanie said. Stephanie does like the reciprocal arrangement. She thinks it is a benefit to Glencoe residents and would be fine with doing it again this year. So Carol, if you could be a little more specific about how you feel about this, we'll move it onto the board meeting.
I mean, I think it is nice to say to Glencoe residents, because we don't have a pool that we can offer this. I will say that I think Northbrook's probably getting the better end of the deal. I can see myself potentially using, you know, I have young kids, you know, and that going to the swimming pool range, going a couple times, but I also go to the Highland Park pool. I also go to Glenview. There's also people who have memberships at Lifetime. So there's a lot of options for pools other than Northbrook. And so I just think that there's a better value in that asset that's a little bit more unique, but I do like being able to say, well, we don't have a pool, but we have this. I think that is a nice thing to say. I also wish we, you know, if we could even make this decision in February, once we know and have a little bit more information, that would be helpful too. But I'm not too concerned about the beach being overcrowded.
So, Lisa, there you have it. We have a variety
clear
of...
Clear as mud. That was as clear as mud there.
No, I get, yeah. I will also say I did speak with some real estate agents, as I like to do when topics like this come up. And the feedback I got is that, yes, people with young children who look at houses here, it does happen, not all the time, but occasionally, hey, what about a pool? And they like to be able to say, no, you can go to the Northbrook pool just and pay resident rates there. So that is an advantage, certainly in the pros column. So, Lisa, given what you've heard here, I'm trying to ascertain, I think we could bring this to a vote at the next meeting. I think we could. Is that your feeling after hearing this discussion?
Sure.
And the vote
on the agenda to vote.
Yeah,
okay.
And it may be that we're going to table it. We're going to table it for later. And it may. Okay, that's the other thing. Okay, so let
our spring brochure goes to print on February 10th, so we'd have to make a vote in January at the joint January board meeting.
Okay, so it has to be then. Okay, but one of the options could be we're going to wait for next year. So that will be that's
okay. If there's a concern about reciprocity, is there an option to just say this is open to 200 residents on either side? Cap it.
But we've never done it that way. And what do you do the first 200? I think we might get more pushback than we would.
We capped beach sales 2 years ago and, you know, it didn't have that much.
But if the first 200 get in there and they get resident rates and then the others two are 100% higher, I don't know. I don't know. What do you feel about that?
You know, Lisa, I think.
We've done this before. Like we told residents, hey, look, we're selling 1,000 passes to the beach during the height of COVID. And some residents I know got blocked out. And it wasn't
this is totally different what you're asking for. What you're asking for is to sell 200 at resident rates and then sell the rest at non-resident rates.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Exactly
animal.
What we did with the beach. We said we're going to sell 200 passes to residents and not sell them to the rest of the residents. It's not that drastically different is my point.
Lisa, I think that it's important to note when you talk about reciprocity that these facilities cost $8 to $10 million to build.
Right.
So as part of this agreement, we are not engaging in the capital cost of a long-term facility build. I mean, these pools in Northbrook are not insignificant. These are $8 to $10 to $15 million facilities that we're gaining access to for our residents at a discount. So as we're almost buying into their system for this particular asset.
For like $55,000.
Yeah, I think that's really, I mean, one of the things that I know every time we have a community meeting, we hear from somebody in the crowd, build a pool.
Yeah.
I mean, we do. And this is an $8 to $10 to $15 million asset that our residents are gaining access to for, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 outside of the pandemic. So I think that's a really important to note.
Yeah. That being said, like, as I said, I'm probably much closer with Carol, where I think this is something that we should do. But my point was, if there is a concern about crowding, you know, if that is what is stopping us from making this decision, it doesn't sound like it is. It sounds like it's more timing and COVID. But if there's a concern about crowding, I think you can mitigate that. But we can figure out ways to do it, but I think we can mitigate it.
I would not be concerned about crowding because we did not limit passes at all last year. I mean, we never limited them to anybody. We sold as many as we could. Yep. So we weren't, and last year was a more dangerous year, theoretically, because that wasn't vaccinating for kids, school age kids. So I don't think crowding is our concern, to be honest.
The concern then, Lisa Brooks, if I can summarize, the concern is the COVID aspect.
No, it's an equity aspect, which you did address.
That's what I was saying.
It's an equity aspect. Yeah. Yeah.
You can mitigate that with limits, but we don't want to do that. I get it.
Yeah. Okay. And to Chris's point, I will say, despite the fact that we have had this arrangement in place other than the COVID break for years, we still have people asking for a pool. So it's not like it totally solves the problem, but I'm not dying on this hill. I like it theoretically. I just don't like it. The math is not working for me, but it never has. So I'm fine with however this vote goes. And Lisa, I think we're good to vote next time.
Okay.
I think it'll be fine.
Sounds good.
All right.
I'll put it on the January agenda.
Okay, very good. Okay then, is there any other business, Ms. Shepherd?
No, just any questions about the Cook County vaccine mandate that anybody has? I know that over the break, there was a lot of emails from me on that topic, just sharing what the Cook County mandate was. Any questions?
Notice that, thank you. I know you guys had to pivot during your holiday break. I'm grateful that Cook County made it a lot easier for us to implement. So thank you for that.
Yes, I am very thankful for that too. And that was a lot of behind the scenes talking to the Cook County that happened from the whole Park District network. So,
I have to say, I knew as this was unfolding over the New Year holiday and prior and after and during, that staff was really being called to, you know, leave their families, friends, and plans to deal with this. And it felt reassuring to know that staff is really on top of it, and you communicated with us during this time made me realize that that's exactly how this should work. I'm just watching it play out, and we do appreciate it very much what staff did, and we acknowledge what you did during a time where you probably, you know, would have preferred to be with your families. So thank you.
Thank you. We did put our youth programs on a pause until the 14th or 15th, I guess, through Friday, in conjunction with the District 35. And we asked GYS and GGHP to do the same thing. We do have some challenges in Children's Circle with teachers being out, and Jess is working her magic. We are probably at the lowest staffing levels we ever have been. So we'll keep you abreast if we have to close any classrooms or make any modifications because of low staff. But we're working as hard as we can to keep people in the classroom. That means we tested all of our early childhood teachers before they came back. So we didn't open on Monday to test everybody, so that we knew whoever could come back was healthy and we didn't have to expose any of the children. So it's a very hard time, and we know a lot of people went on vacation, and appreciate those who did adhere to our vaccine not our vacation request, and if they did go away, if they'd stay out. But we had probably had, what, 50% out of school today.
We were really low. We were between travel quarantine and family quarantine. We're at about 50%. Clearly in the community.
What about the faculty? What about the staff?
Pardon me? What was that?
What percent of the staff were out?
So we have a fair number. We have a fair number out.
We can't give you any other details.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a violation.
We just want to make sure we don't identify anything. But we've
Children's
Circles where we're struggling, and Kids Club as well. ELC is in good shape, but Kids Club and Children's Circles not great.
You can't give us a percentage of.
It's about 15%.
Okay, that's not horrible. It's actually less than what I would have thought.
Yeah, you're right with dealing with the children and family.
A quick clarification for you, Bobby. The current rule is, I'm so confused. Is it 5 days, and if you're symptom free and you test negative, just quickly tell us once.
So
you're
great question. So preschool is, we believe, covered under schools, which is not 5 days. It's 10 days. Oh. You test positive. So.
DCFS have not adopted the five-day rule yet, so.
But ISBE, IDPH and ISBE preschools is defined in that. So until we get further clarification, and it looks like there was some, CDC came out and gave some further clarification this evening, saying that they're not going to add the negative test. But as of right now, our staff in preschool are with 10 days. The school district is going with 10 days for their staff. So it's likely we're not going to be doing. We're going to have to discuss the youth side, but the majority of the teachers at our preschool, they're all going to be stuck with the 10 days, which makes it more difficult for us.
We're watching those carefully because just like the vaccine mandate, they're ever changing. So we're not putting anything in stone until at least end of the week to make sure that they worked out all their conflicts.
I will provide feedback that I, and I believe most of the other parents, really thought it was a great decision to close on Monday to test the staff rather than risk the longer closures. I don't know if you had gotten feedback from parents on that, but I think we were all grateful to get notice for the day off and save ourselves from potential longer quarantine, knock on wood.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And I'm sure it's helpful. I know we got notified to let you know if our kids will be out, so you can plan accordingly for staffing. I had a question just in regard to, you know, the delay in the start of the programs. I got an email, you know, that, you know, some of them will be, you know, prorated for one less week, et cetera. How were the vendors? Like, I'm thinking we work with Sarah Hall, we work, I don't know if it's Hot Shot Sports, I'm thinking about some of the ones we work with. Were we able to get, you know, rates with them to reflect the shorter time frame, or are we taking any kind of loss on prorating the fees for those programs?
That's a good question. We should not take any financial from that. So we work on a per class basis with most of them, or a percentage revenue split. So it depends on the class, but some classes we're going to extend, you know, some of our preschool, we'll run them longer into the school year, because we tend to finish a little bit earlier. Some we'll just have to prorate, and some there's discussion of even running over spring break, because a lot of families want to be in town and giving people the option to do that over spring break. We're actually having a lot of contractors struggling with staffing. So with actually the pause, it was a sigh of relief for a lot of them, because they're really struggling with their staff being quarantined and hiring. So it's a team effort with our contractors. There's been a couple of programs you saw that, you know, we had to continue. Ice skating obviously is outside. We had Sarah Hall with some sunk costs there with the performance. So we're just pivoting and trying to get as much in as we can, as safely as we can, with no, very little financial impact to the district.
Good question.
Thank you, Bobby. Does any commissioner have any more to add to this discussion or any questions? Okay, then. And Lisa, any other business, or is that it?
That's it.
Okay, very good. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Covey?
Approved.
Commissioner Schneider?
Approved.
Commissioner Spain?
Approved.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Excellent.
Motion passes. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. We do plan to have the January board meeting via